welcome to the Diet Detox Podcast. I'm your host, Margaret Berry, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, master TTAP trainer, and mother of two. I'm joined by my co-host, Victoria Wilkes, a fellow intuitive eater, passionate TTAPper, and mother of two. Each week, we want to empower you with new information about the way our bodies and minds work together to bring us into balance when we are well-nourished and well-fed. Victoria and I are not only good friends, but we are also lucky enough to be sisters-in-law. So join us as we discuss topics such as body image, intuitive eating, women's health, pregnancy and postpartum nutrition, the science behind nutrition and exercise, and so much more. Remember our disclaimer, the materials and content within this podcast are intended as general information only and are not to be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now let's get to the show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Diet Detox Podcast. I'm your host, Margaret Berry, here with my sister-in-law, Victoria Wilkes.
Knitting away.
Oh, as always. Knitting always. And I'm sitting here doing nothing. So, yeah, well, how have you been?
I've been well. I slept a total of 9 hours last night, but I got up 5 times, so I was kind of a zombie, but also kind of well rested, so my body didn't really know what to do with itself today, so.
I was like, fine, I took 9 hours, but 5 weeks.
Exactly, oh, yeah.
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, really well.
Good, yeah. I have been pretty well. I'm a little bit busy this week, and then, of course, we have the snow, so.
Yes.
That kind of threw a wrench in our plans. We were supposed to get together earlier today, but neither of us could get to the other's house.
I managed to make it out to the podcast.
But we managed to make it for the podcast, which is lucky for you all.
Yes.
So, well, we'll start off our usual segment at the beginning, which is what have you been eating that's good? So, what have you been eating that's good?
So, Galen, my husband, has told me about this for a long time, but I've never tried it because it sounded really gross. But it is strawberries and sour cream dipped in sugar.
Oh, yes.
So I always thought, because I like sour cream on Mexican food and stuff, and I'm allergic to, like, I can't just drink a straight glass of milk, but I can do pure fat. So I can do, like, sour creams, no problem. Or raw cheese. I can do different things. I'm slowly adding in more things, and so far I've been fine.
Nice.
I would love to be able to drink a glass of milk.
That's so cool. I think you can work up to it.
Yes. But but anyway, I tried it and it tastes, I have a little bag of pure maple sugar. And so it kind of tastes a little bit like brown sugar.
Uh-huh.
Like really caramelly and rich and
caramelized flavor.
So good. And so for me, I have to dip it in enough sugar to where it doesn't taste sour. But whenever you dip it in enough sugar, it tastes to me like cream cheese frosting.
Oh,
it tastes so good. Like that bit of tang. Oh man, it's good. Yeah. What have you been eating?
Oh, that sounds good. Well, I think I was telling you about these apple sauce. It's not applesauce, but they're like kettle cooked apples in a package. They had them at Aldi. They're, I think it's called Big Slice or something like that.
Nice.
I don't know. But they're in these little packets and they have like berry chia flavor, and then they have just apple with cinnamon. But it's basically like eating apple pie filling, and it's naturally sweetened and everything, but it's basically like eating apple pie filling out of a pouch.
Yum.
I mean, how can that be bad?
I know.
It's so good. And the other one, the berry and chia mix, is actually really, really good because it's got the chia in there.
Yum.
Okay, so this is a little side tangent, but this week I was listening to a tangent. Yes, Margaret, you're listening always to yourself do a tangent. But it was a summit on hydration. Like, it was a bunch of these people talking about fascia and hydration and all that. They mentioned chia seeds because chia seeds actually, when they gel in water, when you add them to water and they get that gel around them, that's actually a form of water that your body absorbs better into, you know, in the joints, in the synovial fluid, and in your fascia. There's a kind of water called gel water. And it's a newly discovered water. They didn't even know it existed. But chia, so eating something, like for example, eating an apple with a glass of water is more hydrating to your body and creates more of this gel water in your body than just drinking water alone. Because the apple's got minerals, it's got fiber that create more of this
gel water.
That's crazy.
In your body. It's super cool. So, but the chia.
Interesting, yeah.
Back to the, those packets actually have chia in it. So I've been doing some chia in my water as well. Huh. And it, I actually feel like I, the water goes, put, is put to better use. It doesn't just pee right
That's
out.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. I know what you mean. I have an interesting thing where chia seeds make me nauseous. I'm not sure why. I've heard some people say that they need to be like soaked and sprouted and then dehydrated or different things.
Or ground up.
I'll have to look into that. Yeah.
Definitely. You could grind them up and
they make me nauseous, which is a very odd
thing. Yeah, I've heard of that from someone else. And I think they were having some other issues.
Something about
other
in traditional cultures, they don't ever eat chia seeds like we do in the States. Mm-hmm. They prepare them a certain way first. I'd be curious if that destroys hydrating properties or
I bet, yeah.
I'm curious.
Because traditional foods, it's kind of funny, traditional foods are always prepared differently than...
Yes.
like cocoa powder, for example. Like, if you look back at the history of cocoa, they just ate it out of it. Like, they didn't do anything crazy to it like we do. Like, you know, cocoa powder, and here is a Hershey's...
Right.
You know, whatever, Hershey's bar. They just, you know... We do a bunch of stuff to it.
It's interesting. Sometimes. Or like, and then sometimes we lack things like fermentation or soaking, sprouting, whatever.
All that Weston Price stuff that's really cool with all that. But
we're not here to talk about cocoa beans. We're here to talk about pregnancy.
We're here to talk about, the Brewer Pregnancies Diet, which is both of our favorite, I won't say it's our favorite topic.
It's very
but
near
it's,
and dear to our hearts.
Exactly. Because it's just...
Do you
want to
give a brief
about.
Overview of your first, like one sentence, like, first pregnancy issues, second pregnancy?
Yes. Okay. So, my first pregnancy, I mentioned it a couple episodes ago, maybe, but my first pregnancy, I actually gained, I believe it was like 25, 26 pounds. I had my daughter 3 weeks early. I was induced because they were concerned about my blood pressure. Now, I do believe that my blood pressure was more of an anxiety than it was pathological, at least from what I could see. But I found out about the Brewer diet midway through because I would go in and my blood pressure would be high in the office and I'd come home or even in the parking lot, I would take it and it would be fine. But I was still, nonetheless, of course, as one does, you're researching and you're digging and you're looking. And I found out about the Brewer diet and I started to try to do it a little bit and was like, this is so much food, and I didn't really understand, and I did use it a little bit in that pregnancy, but not a lot. So it actually made me interested for when I had my next baby. I was like, by golly, I understood the science better, I understood the physiology, and I was like, I'm going to try it. So then I did it for my next pregnancy. We'll talk about that too. But yeah, but you want to...
Yeah, for me, my first one... I also mentioned my pregnancy in a different podcast episode, but I did a very typical, be careful, eat salt in moderation, fat in moderation, all that kind of thing, kind of continuing my quote unquote very reasonable food restriction throughout my life. Just staying healthy, like the classic kind of deal. And I was having so many Braxton Hicks, which are practice contractions at 31 weeks with dizziness, with faintness, all kinds of weird, like lightheaded. And so I got a bunch of tests done and they tested my heart and they tested my blood and nothing happened. And then the next week I went ahead and just went in to the hospital because I was having so many practice contractions and they said that I was having preterm labor. And so I got put on strict bed rest, only allowed to get up to go to the bathroom for 6 weeks. And that was super, super hard. And then it made me feel like my body was really broken and messed up. And like, oh man, I can't even carry a baby, that kind of thing. And then had a really hard birth. And then postpartum had a lot of trouble breastfeeding. The root cause of it was a tongue tie and a lip tie with my daughter. Mm. She couldn't latch properly. But another cause, whenever I was... realizing that my daughter was constipated, dehydrated, she's like 4 months old, losing weight, my mother-in-law said, I really think you should count calories. And I was like, no, I'm eating enough. And turns out I was eating 1,300 calories a day. And then so that's kind of how it started for me, of waking me up to the fact that I'd had this lifelong problem, waking me up to the fact, maybe lack of food could have had a part to play in my preterm labor.
Yeah.
I ended up giving birth at 38 weeks, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I'm fuzzy personally on whether that was true preterm labor. Maybe so, because I gave birth at 42 weeks with my son, so maybe it was my body's version of preterm labor.
And that's,
but anyway.
And that's with mine as well, with my blood pressure. It's kind of like, I think that it was mostly anxiety because my daughter was good birth weight for her mm-hmm. age and all of that. She didn't have any issues related to that. But yeah, it's a similar mm-hmm. thing where it's kind
but
of
made
like,
us
oh.
both very interested in, like, how can we prevent that really bad thing? For me, it was the preterm mm-hmm. labor. For you, it was the preeclampsia.
The preeclampsia scares.
Scare.
Exactly.
How can we prevent that next time?
Yeah. How can we basically, and with Brudite, how can you basically prevent pretty much all complications
right.
with your pregnancy with one thing, which is the Brudite? Yeah.
Food.
Yeah. Food.
And you know, interestingly, I'm not sure if you were given any information, but I never was given an explanation ever. Not even, it wasn't even a topic of like, why are you having this preterm labor? Mm-hmm. It was just, oh, honey, you're having preterm labor. Don't get up for 6 weeks. And no explanation whatsoever. No science, no studies, no
like,
theories.
Oh dear, poor you.
Poor you. It just hits you like a train wreck. It's just yeah. kind of bad luck.
Yes.
Bad luck, hun.
Yeah. Yeah, all too bad for you.
Mm-hmm. No, no, no. Let's dig into this. Let's see.
Right. Not why. Let's just, okay, why is your body trying to get mm-hmm. this baby out?
Why are you why? Having high blood pressure? Or
why?
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Why are you, you know, why is your feet swelling? Why are, you know, mm-hmm. all of these symptoms? Because, you know, it's the thing that bugs me is that a lot of people view, quote, pregnancy discomforts as just something that's like everybody has it, right? Your feet swell, you can't, you know, you can't
sleep.
Move around very well, you can't sleep, yeah. you are constipated, you
might
know, all
have to
these,
go on bed rest.
All these things with pregnancy, you have to go on bed rest, you have to be induced early because of your blood pressure, because mm-hmm. we don't like the level that it's at. Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, yes, there's, everybody thinks that those are normal. And it's just just being pregnant. It's called being pregnant.
Right.
And I'm like, right. Because,
and sometimes yeah. it is mystery. But
yeah.
I feel like, just from the research that I've done, Margaret introduced me to the Brewer diet whenever I was pregnant with my son. And I was like, heck yes, I am doing it. Before I was pregnant with mm-hmm. my son, when I was trying to conceive him,
and
I was like, I'm
pregnant with
yes.
Ethan, yeah.
And I was like, this makes so much sense. So
you want to
give an overview of the
sure.
what the Brewer diet is?
Yes, I'll give an overview of it
for anybody who doesn't know. It's not, it doesn't involve brewer's yeast, by
it
the way. That's what I
yes.
used to think.
It doesn't involve, exactly. So essentially, modern medicine, the modern OBGYN, ACOG, they deny any explanation for a cause of or any solutions for prevention of the preterm labor, placenta accretia, placenta previa, where the placenta detaches, low birth weight babies, IUGR, HELLP, HELLP syndrome, preeclampsia.
I was just going to butt in and say,
yes.
ACOG is American College of Obstetric
yes.
and Gynecology.
When yeah. I first heard ACOG, before
like,
I knew what it was, I was like, is this like a gargoyle?
No.
I don't know why I thought of a gargoyle. ACOG.
It sounds so
evil.
But
anyway,
no.
we digress. but yes, so they actually don't have an explanation. They're just
yeah.
like, oh, poor you, it just happens. We're just going to put you on bed rest, or we're just going to put you on blood pressure meds, you know, because
or
your body's
induction. I was reading today, the other day in preparation for this podcast, about a study about preeclampsia specifically, and they were saying, in the study, they were saying the current medical community has no idea why, and
mm-hmm.
the only known cure is birth.
Yeah,
they have
exactly.
no, they have nothing to
exactly.
offer.
And that is what, when I was reading all of this, because they were telling me, well, we don't like how your blood pressure's looking. I was reading all of this, where they're saying, we don't know. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not willing to take I don't know for an answer.
There's got
to
be a reason.
There must right. be a logical reason. Yes, there's genetic stuff that comes up. You may have a genetic predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
You could make an argument that I do, because I don't know. I have Irish ancestry and I get mad easily. Maybe that's why I have a tendency to run higher when I'm in the doctor's office and I'm like, I don't like you guys. Why are you taking my blood pressure?
Right.
Anyhow. But yes, so there are other factors, but it really can be traced back to, you know, your diet. And that's what the Brewer diet, the purpose of it is to make sure that the mom is well nourished and that she can have a wonderful pregnancy, healthy baby, and be really fueled for postpartum and not end up super depleted. It's kind of a proactive approach. And it was developed in the 50s and 60s by an obstetrician whose name was Dr. Tom Brewer. And he developed it after watching women in his practice with all these things like preeclampsia, you know, preterm labor.
Used to be called toxemia.
Exactly. Yeah. Used to be called toxemia. In fact, I have a book that I got a vintage copy of that was made back in the 80s because, believe it or not, back in the 80s, the Brewer diet started to come in a resurgence because people were doing more of the Bradley method. Bradley method does a version of the Brewer diet.
Yes.
So anyway, that he actually, the book that I had calls it toxemia because it was, you know, that's what they used to call it as. So
I just mentioned that because if you look up any studies by Dr. Brewer, he's going to say toxemia.
That's
but
a
it
good
means
point.
It's preeclampsia.
Yes, that's essentially the old fashioned name for it. They just turned it into, actually, okay, I have a theory about this. Preeclampsia is different than eclampsia because eclampsia is like, if you've watched Downton Abbey and Sybil,
yes.
that's literally what's playing in my mind when they were like, we think you might be gay, you know, and of course, that didn't help me, right?
Sybil dying.
I was like, I'm gonna die. So that is eclampsia, is the seizures, like the actual, you are having seizures. And the pre-eclampsia is this
kind of the warning
area and the warning signs where you can be, and they actually diagnose it by its numbers, of course, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if it's over this number in X many, you know, three times within an hour in different locations, and it, you know, different, you know, sitting up,
blood
laying
pressure,
down, blood pressure,
yes.
And then they also diagnose it by amount of protein in your urine. So that's how they diagnosed the preeclampsia part. But he developed it to, essentially his theory and the basis of the Brewer diet is that if you are able to create abundant blood volume, because when you're pregnant, your blood supply needs to increase by 60%, the average of 60%, you need to increase your blood supply. And
Well, your body should be doing it on its own. It's not like something you have to do, but it will struggle and possibly fail to create that blood supply if you're not adequately nourished.
Exactly. And that's because he was looking at it as, what if all of these pregnancy issues, the toxemia, preeclampsia, the preterm labor, the IUGR,
hemorrhage.
Exactly. Postpartum hemorrhage. What if all of those could be traced back to mom's body going, we don't have enough blood because the nutrients are in the blood, right? We don't have enough blood to go around. So how are we going to compensate? Well, let's just, you know, pull a little bit back from the baby and then you have IGR.
Yes.
Or let's reduce some of that and then you have this high blood pressure because...
Well, let's kick the baby out. And then
exactly.
You have,
or just kick the baby out.
Where the body says, okay, the baby can survive, lungs are developed, get the baby out.
As soon as possible.
Because
exactly.
We can't sustain both baby
because
and mom.
We can't sustain. So he was looking at it, what if the low blood supply, the low, you know, creating this 60% extra, what if the mom's body is not able to do that or do it well, and it leaves her in the state of not being as well nourished, not having enough of that blood supply, and then you get even anemia.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole other rabbit trail on that I've researched with regard to that. But it's very interesting that the reason why your body needs that extra blood supply is that when you need that during pregnancy, you have a placenta. So as the placenta is growing, it's forming this lake of blood. I know, lovely visual, right? Lake of blood behind itself as it implants and grows. And this new blood that you're building is basically, when you're building the placenta and the placenta is attaching, you have to build that blood supply for the placenta. And as it grows larger, ensuring that you have enough flow coming in so that it doesn't get clotted or clogged, you have to keep that blood flowing well in there. And during the first trimester, the placenta and the lake of blood that's behind it is smaller, so there's not as much of a blood volume increase at that point.
Right.
But as you get more into your pregnancy, and especially if you have twins, obviously you're going to be doing even more, you actually have to, you know, it has to increase. You're having to increase your blood supply. And what do you grow your blood supply with? And the premise of the Brewer diet, four basic components. It consists of 14 food groups. However, it can be summarized as starting with four basic components. Average. Again, we'll talk about tweaking for individual needs. 2,600 calories. 80 to 120.
2,600 minimum, right?
Minimum.
All these are minimum.
This is minimum. Exactly. Right. 2,600. 80 to 120 grams of protein. Salt to taste. No restricting salt. Mm-hmm. And then the weight gain, or unrestricted weight gain. Mm-hmm. Those are the components. So that good nutrition goes into making the blood. And making the blood obviously helps with that, helping with your blood supply enough for you and your baby. One thing real quick I want to say about blood pressure is, because that's my area of area of expertise. Yeah. Sort of. So the interesting thing is that if you had a hose, how your blood vessels work. If you have a hose and you are running water, you know, you're running water through the hose. Let's say it's like your blood supply. You're running water through the hose. If you were to take out some of the water in that circulation, let's say pipes, you take out some of the water, you want to be able to, if you take some of that water out, it's going to, there's going to be less volume in the pipes. There's going to be like not as much flowing through all the surface of the pipes. In your body, if you have a blood vessel, the blood needs to be filling all of that blood vessel.
No empty space.
No empty space. So if you are in a situation with blood pressure, for example, you don't have enough blood to go around, you and the baby and the placenta and everybody in there, you don't have enough blood to go around. Well, what's going to happen? Well, your body, instead of having nice big blood vessels, your body
where
is actually
flowing freely.
Where everything's flowing freely, it's going to pull it and constrict it. Because then, guess what? You have a smaller surface area for the blood to go around. Because your body does not want to create a bubble in your blood. It has to keep the blood in the vessel touching all the surfaces. So, higher pressure means that it's going to...
The hose is squeezed, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The hose is squeezed, and it's going to be... it's not going to have... It's going to have higher pressure rather than a lower pressure.
In order to compensate for the lack of blood volume.
Exactly. If you don't have enough blood, your vessels are going to constrict, and then that's going to cause an uptick in your blood pressure, and you're going to be like, well, why? And sometimes it hits women all of a sudden. They get to a certain certain number of weeks, which why, interestingly enough, the time that preeclampsia can hit is that 34-week mark, where your body has a big increase in blood supply right before you're going into that final home stretch. Usually if someone that I hear, they delivered early, and usually it's that 31 weeks is a real severe case, but 31 to 34 is very common for preeclampsia to have occur. So you have to have that blood volume filling up those blood vessels so that they don't constrict to keep the blood in the blood vessels and not have any aneurysms in there. So... But yeah, so basically, you have to have that blood volume. And it's interesting as well that the common result for like blood pressure is that they will throw aspirin. They'll be like, okay, you just take an aspirin to thin your blood out. We don't know what's going on. We don't know.
Try to cover up the symptoms.
Try to just Band-Aid. Basically, right. Band-Aid. And then for you, put you on bed rest, basically.
Right. Just don't move.
Exactly.
Don't move and the baby might fall out.
Don't move and the baby might fall out. So, but basically... The other thing that people think is just the Band-Aid approach, right? Oh, put that, just give yourself some aspirin to thin the blood out and maybe go on blood pressure meds. But really, his studies had shown and his work with women showed that when a woman is well-nourished and need enough calories, enough protein, enough fat, and enough salt, because salt is responsible for so much in your body, the minerals that are in there, the osmotic pressure.
And we're not necessarily talking about like,
Morton
iodized salt. More of like Celtic sea salt, Himalayan pink salt, the ones that have the minerals in them.
Exactly.
But haven't had the minerals processed out.
Exactly. You've got to have the raw, like, I like the, you can use red mineral salt or the Himalayan pink salt's really good. Or Celtic sea salt's really good. I use that as well. So, but basically, in order to keep your baby healthy and happy, keep your body healthy and happy, having those building blocks for your body to make that blood, to continue manufacture, because your body is still taking care of your body, and it's growing the baby as well. So still having that having that abundance of minerals and vitamins and everything that you need coming from your diet, as opposed to just eat an extra 300 calories and life will be great.
Well, and to kind of put a note in there, whenever I only got maybe a talk of about 5 minutes, mm-hmm. whenever I went through the more traditional hospital approach, I got a talk with the nurse for maybe about 5 minutes, and she just said, make sure you're eating an extra 300 calories a day. She's like, make sure you don't go crazy now. She said, an extra 300 calories a day is like half a sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, make sure, you know, and it's just like, okay, well, just be careful. And I was again, in preparation for this podcast, I went ahead and just researched what ACOG recommends, and it's quite restrictive. It's kind of the classic low-fat, careful you don't eat too many carbs, low salt. They said about a teaspoon per day. And they focus on micronutrients like vitamin D, iron, and folic acid. And in their minds, it's kind of like, okay, well, if you're getting enough of these crucial minerals, then you're good. But you need a lot more than just minerals to build the baby. You need you need the actual blood. And in we'll link to it in the show notes, but there's a Midwifery Today article about the Brewer diet, and they were commenting that pretty much all research on pregnancy nutrition stopped in the 80s. They said that once they figured out about the importance of like vitamin D, choline, iron, folic acid, or folate, they were kind of like, okay, well now, they said, the article was saying that the focus has switched entirely to drugs. To what drugs are safe during pregnancy, what drugs are going to prevent preeclampsia, what drugs are going to prevent nausea, when it makes a lot more sense physiologically and just logically.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about, well, maybe we don't need more drugs. Maybe we need to actually focus on eating plentiful food. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes a lot of sense.
It makes a whole lot of sense. And yeah, and I think that people just think that, oh, well, you're telling us to eat, you're telling us to eat donuts all day. And it's like, okay, the diet actually itself, which of course, ironically, we're saying it's the Brewer diet on the Diet Detox podcast, but really it's a way of eating that, because pregnancy is a very nutrient needful time is what I'll call it. And this is kind of, for me, with, you know, exercising as well and running after a toddler, I had to be really intentional about, okay, you know, my protein. I mean, I ate, so they had the 80 to 120 yes. range because of my activity level.
And because you had gotten pregnant so quickly.
Oh yeah. I got pregnant with Ethan when my daughter was 10 months old and I was nursing her. So they actually have little add-ons that you can add, and as we will show you on their website, we'll have that in the show notes. You can go to their website and you can see, okay, if you are a mom who got pregnant, you know, and you have a nursing baby, here's what you need to add on or consider adding on.
Right.
And then if you have twins, here's what you need to consider. Right. So I did, I mean, I did a lot of protein.
She was like a
protein
mega
queen.
Mega mom.
So awesome. Much protein. And I did a lot of protein and I felt darn good. Like, I felt really good. And I felt really strong and I actually gained muscle mass. Like, I could tell I gained muscle mass during pregnancy.
Awesome.
During pregnancy, which is remarkable. And, but basically, his theory is, you know, having all those nutrients to build your blood so you have this adequate blood supply for you and your baby to prevent your body from, basically, it's preventing your body from going into stress mode.
Right.
That's what it's doing.
Again, it's basically a ramped up version of intuitive eating, kind of plentiful eating, but it's more crucial during pregnancy, and sometimes it's really hard to eat a lot of protein and eat enough salt. And so in this particular instance, following guidelines for your food can be very helpful because you can make sure that you're hitting the minimums. Mm-hmm. We're not saying, like, go on a diet and make sure you don't eat too much fat. Like, we're saying,
go on, like, check to make sure you're eating enough.
Yes,
because because for me, it was easy for me to not eat a lot and just be like,
because your stomach gets smaller and smaller the bigger you get too, and then it's hard to, sometimes you're really nauseous. And honestly, and I want to put in a note too, that some moms I know of who have severe nausea, like HG, tend to have the severe preeclampsia and stuff like this because they literally can't get the food down.
Yep.
So it's not your fault if you have severe nausea and then it ends up causing problems because you can't eat enough and all that. Like, roll with it.
it's all right.
You're fine. Like, you're good. Yeah. But in most cases, it's a good idea, if you can, mm-hmm. to hit these minimums.
Try to do it. And also, just trying to hit the minimum. And then if you feel like you need more, you can add more. Or oh, if yeah. some days you feel like you need a little less, that's okay. Now, for me personally, with my history, yeah. I was very like, we're hitting the minimums. by golly, we're hitting the minimums. Just because I wanted to be sure that that part of the puzzle was taken care of. Mm-hmm. And, interestingly enough, I had zero issues with anything relating to my blood pressure, anything that happened with the bleeding afterwards, any of the stuff that you would tell someone like me, oh, well, you're
going to be high risk.
You're going to be high risk for this in your next pregnancy. Nothing. My son was a very reasonable weight. He was 8 pounds and he was born 40 weeks and 5 days. And, like, you know, you would think that...
if it's a mystery thing that just hits a woman and then every time she has a baby, mm-hmm. then it's going to... She's likely to hit it again. You don't... for me, the Brewer diet takes out that element of, well, you never know. You might mm-hmm. just get hit with it. And, of course, stuff can always happen.
Of course,
but
yeah.
you're giving yourself and your baby the best chance.
You are giving yourself a... You're basically, what I like to say is you're taking care of the part you can take care of.
Yeah.
And then the rest, you don't stress about it. Yeah. You can have some freak thing happen that nobody has ever had happen before. Like some of these birth stories we listen to are like, wow, I've never heard of that before.
You can't help everything. It's not a magic pill, mm-hmm. but it's...
It's the foundations of good nutrition yeah. for you and your baby. And it's, yeah. I thought of it in the days when I was like, I don't want to eat another dadgum egg or I'm going to lose my mind. I would think, okay, I'm giving my baby a gift. This is me. Yeah. I'm eating well to, you know, help my son grow. I didn't know he was a boy at the time. But, you know, yeah. I was eating to help him grow and give us the best shot we could. Because we did have a home birth and it went really well. And I'm really grateful for that. And part of it for me as well was changing a big part of my feeling empowered and feeling, I don't super like the word empowered, but you know, feeling confident in what I was doing was also getting out of the care that I had been under, which for my daughter's birth, which was very different. And the midwife that I used with my son was so much more taking the time to listen and how are you mm-hmm. feeling really? And, and really just encouraging me to do what I knew how to do best, which is fuel myself and create.
Nobody was telling you or me, because we had the same midwife mm-hmm. for the second. We were pregnant at the same time, which was really fun.
That was really fun.
2019.
We need to do that again next time.
I'll have to time it. Because we can control life like that.
Right. We are completely in control of it. Yes.
I told her, I was like, hey, I'm doing the Brewer diet. This is my history. This is my history with weight gain. This is my history of body image. And she was just like, you know best. Go with it. Like,
yeah.
And she would check up on me and be like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing worth saying as well is that the whole weight gain and pregnancy, because that's the thing that people come up with next, is people say, so you're telling me to have unrestricted eating and unrestricted weight gain. And
that's what we're saying.
And guess what? We both ate according to what our bodies needed, the minimums, most days. And I had an 8 pound baby and you had almost 10 pound baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we both did what our bodies were asking for. So exactly. It's not like a standardized rule. If you do this, you will have a baby that is X amount. It's very individual.
Or that you're going to gain this much weight. Like I gained, and we already covered weight gain and body image during pregnancy in a separate episode.
Yes.
But just to recap, like I gained very erratically and my appetite was very erratic too. So I didn't follow the Brewer diet to a T every single day. I was very, very, not strict with it, but I was very careful to hit my minimums.
Yes.
But then some days sometimes I would eat, and I don't count calories because that is triggering for me, but I would count every couple weeks or so just to make sure I was hitting the minimums. And sometimes I was on average going around 3,000 or more.
Yeah.
And that's just the way, and about 75 grams of protein. So not quite almost to the minimum.
Yeah.
So don't stress about it, but
don't let it become a stressor,
which is going to be beside the point, but
yeah.
Very, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. and not letting it become a stressor. Just thinking of it as a tool in your toolbox to help you yes. and your baby have the best chance possible. And that's yes. what I viewed it as. And I was very, had to be very intentional with it. And, yeah, and people do with the weight gain, you know, go, oh, well, and there's a lot of research. Of course, obviously, we would love to talk about this for like 3 hours, yes. but, and we could, really, guys, we could, because we have researched this so much. But really, if you want even more, there are so many resources, we'll link them. But basically, the weight gain thing is not all that people no. are saying in the medical community for pregnancy. That it's really not evidence-based. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, the 25 pounds, we each gained the approved 25 pounds.
And we both had issues.
We did. And then I gained 45 pounds this last time, and it was very erratic. It would be, I gained a pound a day for 10 days. And then for the last trimester, I gained yeah. nothing.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And I still had a 10-pound baby. And so it's, you can't put bodies mm-hmm. in a standard and tell a 6-foot woman
yes.
and a 5-foot woman with different histories, different ages, you both need to gain 25 pounds.
It's
so you can't do that. And so yeah. the Brewer diet was just like, the Dr. Brewer was just like, it's a moot point. Weight mm-hmm. does not matter. And
your health matters.
Your health
your
matters.
Your weight doesn't.
Weight
isn't
does
he
matter.
So forward thinking, guys? Back in the 50s and 60s, it's not your weight, it's your health. Yes. Imagine that. That's kind of what we're saying. It's not about how right. much on the scale. And also, worth pointing out, when you're doing the Brewer diet, and also when you're anytime you're just pregnant and you're not even doing, you know, a Brewer diet, you're gonna gain some weight that's blood. It's not fat, it's blood.
Yes, I did there's a jump in blood supply that you gain about 8 pounds in 2 weeks, and yes. I did that at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember
she texted me, and I was like, "Yep, that's the jump."
I gained the 8 pounds
because there's actually a jump there. And I don't think, I was just thinking, I don't think I have this info on
here. I think
the
Brewer diet, the Brewer website said something about 10 to 15 pounds of it mm-hmm. is exactly. Fluid.
Is the fluid, yeah.
Is the fluid, and that you will probably lose it within the first couple weeks. And I did, I lost 20 pounds in the first week of pregnancy, the yeah. first week postpartum.
And also, okay, let's tell them about the salt. Let's talk about the salt. Okay, so salt is one of those things as well. Oh, don't eat too much salt. It'll increase your risk of preeclampsia.
Right.
Preeclampsia.
It'll raise blood pressure.
Actually, nothing could be further from the truth. I can tell you, in my blood work from my previous pregnancy with my daughter, first pregnancy, where I had the issues, my sodium was low. Do you think anybody told me that? No. Nobody told me that. Nothing about that. No, no word on that my sodium was low. In this pregnancy, I ate salt like a crazy person. And I did salt. I did the salt shots. I did all that. The reason why you want salt is because the salt, the calories, and the protein are what builds your blood supply. Those three components together are what increases a good blood supply. Because when you're building blood, your osmotic pressure, the pressure that is in your blood pressure and the pressure in those in the blood vessels and just in your fluids, that has to increase. And you have to use the salt because salt has minerals in it. Minerals create electrical charge, and that is what increases and the changes the osmotic pressure.
And that keeps the fluid of the blood inside your veins, right?
Doesn't yes, let exactly.
the fluid, because otherwise it holds the fluid and your blood inside your veins, so that the water, the liquid from the water from the blood, doesn't seep out into your tissues and cause
a sweat.
Yes, swelling.
Exactly. Yes. So it holds that. In those, I think it's called interstitial place. It holds that fluid in there so that it's
so
not
salt is really out. Crucial. Salt mm-hmm. is crucial. It's not just and I know I noticed whenever I went to the beach and I was sweating constantly. I was in my 34 weeks and I went to the beach and it was so hot, so humid. I was taking salt shots every couple hours
yeah.
and I was still so swollen I couldn't. Put on my wedding ring, and then whenever I would get cooled off, and I'd stop sweating so much, and I could retain the salt and all that, my swelling would go down.
Mm-hmm. And you with the ring, remember with
yes,
your ring?
Yes, with my ring, yep. I could wear my ring again. Sometimes if I would be really, really diligent, I would forget the salt shot. Salt shots are basically an eighth of a teaspoon, or a little bit, like salt that you just take throughout the day that's recommended in the brewer diet.
Yes.
To make sure that you're getting enough salt, especially during the summer months when you're sweating.
Yep, exactly. The salt is so important. And people, again, think that it's just, oh, well, my doctor told me not to gain a lot of weight and not to use too much salt.
Right.
Or not to use too much. And really?
And I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that the blood pressure salt link, this was hearsay. I heard somebody say that was a really bad study.
Oh,
that
yes.
That was kind of run with. Same as low fat. That was a study that was done, and that was it, the 80s? That was extremely flawed, but the media just took it and ran with it. And then it was suddenly the holy grail of health. Same deal with salt and blood pressure. But
yep,
whether exactly. or not you believe that salt is related to high blood pressure in normal life, it is different in pregnancy. If you overdo the salt, am I correct that your body will eliminate it through
pee? Oh, pee it out.
Yes,
it's like magnesium. If you've ever taken too much magnesium, what happens? Yeah. Well,
you have diarrhea.
You have some diarrhea, and that's what it will get rid of it.
Your body gets rid of it safely. You're not going to.
Yeah. And a quick note too, this was something I was going to say earlier, this is on the similar note with the osmotic pressure. So a lot of people during pregnancy will say, okay, you need to drink nettle tea. And red raspberry is controversial in the brew diet. I'm not even going to go into that because they count it as an herbal supplement. But some people will say, okay, well, if you're pregnant and you're having trouble with your blood pressure, you need to take hawthorn berry, or you need to take, you know, insert herb here, or a herbal blend. Red raspberry is more for uterine toning.
Yes.
It's for uterine toning. But they will tell you, I'll take these herbs and it will help your blood pressure. Well, in a pregnant body, it will not behave or work as well in a pregnant body as it will in a non-pregnant body. So if you had someone come in who is, you know, a middle-aged man, needs to lower his blood pressure is high for a different reason than a pregnant lady's might be high. Mm-hmm. In a pregnant body, the rising blood pressure is from an abnormally contracted blood volume. There's not enough. And in the non-pregnant body, you could do something like lessen the amount of their blood volume and give them diuretics, right?
Right.
You could just make them lessen the amount of the blood volume, or you need to increase the space for the blood to fit into with a vasodilator. So to make those veins and arteries dilate bigger and relaxing the pressure in the body. But in the pregnant body, the only thing that will truly work for bringing the blood pressure down or to prevent it from increasing beyond normal levels is to constantly work on keeping that blood volume increased so you have plenty of it, because the preeclampsia and the high blood pressure is basically your body, it's like it's going into shock.
There is not enough blood.
There is not enough blood.
It's kind of like a slow hemorrhage almost.
Exactly.
It's lack of blood. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. And there are tests as well. Speaking of blood, there are blood tests that you can do to determine how your blood volume is progressing. If it is contracting.
I did those labs.
So there is a serum albumin, and then there is monitoring the two blood volume panels as well. I need to pull that up because there's good info on that. I might just link it in here on exactly what to do with that. But basically, the serum albumin is a good indicator of how well nourished you are. Any woman that I've ever read her story, and she posts her labs, usually in a group that I'm in, she says, I got preeclampsia, here's my labs. Her serum albumin, I have yet to see a woman who shows her labs who has preeclampsia, both of those two factors, that is in the normal range. It is always lower. It is always 2.7. It needs to be 3.7 is the cutoff, I believe. I need to double check that. But 3.7 is where that's where the minimum that it should be.
Right.
And that's an American, whatever it's called, lab values.
Right.
Because there's different lab values. But you want that 3.7. And my last pregnancy, it hovered at, I think it was like 3.5 or 3.6. I believe it's 3.5 to 3.7 is like, that's on the low end. And then the high end is in the fives. And throughout your pregnancy, it will lower a little bit. That's normal. For me, mine started this pregnancy with my son when I implemented the brewer. it was 4.2 the first time I took it, and I was like, yes! Because last time, it was 3.5 the entire pregnancy. Wow. It went to 3.6 after I started eating a lot of eggs, and then it went to 3.5 again. So you want it in, you know, the 3.5 to 3.7 is a low, you know, low range. The moderate range.
Low fours this mm-hmm. past pregnancy.
See, and yeah, that's, it's exactly. a good indicator. But and serum albumin, there's a, I won't go into the molecular structure of it, but it's basically a way of telling your liver status and your general nourished state. That's one of the most crucial ones. The other one is the hemoglobin and hematocrit levels. Those you can look at those as well. And what you would want to look for on those is you would want to look for the numbers decreasing instead of increasing. Now, why would you want to know if they're decreasing? Well, if they're decreasing as you progress in your pregnancy, let's say it's a 34 and it goes down to a 32 in your hemoglobin mm-hmm. or your hematocrit. Let's say that it's decreasing. Well, it's decreasing. That's a good thing because it means that your blood is getting more dilute.
Oh, so you're saying that it's a good thing for
to decrease.
Okay.
It's very counter, because when I was looking at my own labs, I was like, what? But if the concentration of those type of blood in that sample goes down, then that means that your overall blood is going up.
That makes sense. It's diluted, basically.
Exactly.
You're diluting
it. She calls it, Joy Jones, who's the moderator of the group, she calls it hemodilution.
Huh.
So you want that. If it's rising, so guess what? My last pregnancy with my daughter, my first pregnancy, as I've referenced, I checked my blood work because I got blood work multiple times. I only got it twice with my son, but with my daughter, of course, they were worried about me, so they did a ton of labs. Now, interestingly enough, my numbers steadily increased.
Huh.
Throughout
so
my pregnancy.
So there was something there of your
there
blood.
There was something there.
Interesting.
With the blood volume.
Interesting.
Now, whether or not it was worth inducing me 3 weeks early, mm-hmm. we don't
Doubtful.
Know. And I'm not going to even bother thinking about it because clearly I don't have anything. Clearly my second pregnancy proved that there's not really an issue with that as long as obviously I was doing the stuff I should be doing. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that you want those numbers to go down. The,
I gotcha.
The hemoglobin, it will show up on your blood work as HCT or HGB. HGB mm-hmm. is hemoglobin, HCT is the hematocrit. I guess I'm saying that right. But you want those numbers to go down as your pregnancy progresses. You can often catch it. And that's the great thing. You can catch it. Mm-hmm. You can go, well,
right.
my albumin, serum albumin dropped down to a, you know, 2.2. Well, I, you know, and women have been able, I have watched women implement some of these ideas of mm-hmm. the guru diet, such as frequent snacking, every 2 hours,
right.
every hour. And I have seen people, I saw this one girl for 2 weeks, she did the protocol, this was in the group. Mm-hmm. She did the protocol of, you know, frequent snacking, making sure she was hitting her minimums, getting in that food. Hers went from 2.5 up to a 3.5 in
That's awesome.
2 weeks.
That's awesome.
She was in the group and she was like, I can't believe this. It's working that fast. It's because your liver is like, well, thank goodness.
Right.
Somebody's taking care of us.
That has implications. I remember reading on the Brewer Diet website, which we will link to. If they have separate headings for every one of these topics, talking about weight gain
oh, yeah.
and hemorrhage and HELLP syndrome, preeclampsia, all these different things. And the website, don't let the website throw you off because it looks really clunky.
Yes.
And my first thought of looking at the website was this must be like...
Vintage.
This must be not like... My first thought was to distrust it. It looked like a conspiracy site or something because like all the colors are weird and stuff.
Yes.
But the actual studies that they're linking to, mm-hmm. like read the studies. Don't just take the study at the face value. Read the studies that they're linking to. Read up on the physiology. Think about it logically. Read the description of Dr. Brewer reversing in women that were told to put on bed rest.
Mm-hmm.
He said absolutely not. He went to the ward with the women in the bed rest and he changed their diet to include the minimum number of calories, 2,600, the minimum number of like plentiful mm-hmm. salt, all this stuff. And they did not need to stay on bed rest anymore. Like the bed rest is a band-aid the aspirin as a Band-Aid. Like, yeah. Typically in the medical community, if you cannot point to a randomized clinical trial,
yep,
then they will not recommend it to a pregnant woman. But the problem with that is it's often unethical to test a pregnant woman because you're going to potentially be putting the woman at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So their answer is to just hands back. We don't know. We're not going to tell you to do this diet because we can't prove it. But just use your brain. Whenever studies run out, whenever the research runs dry, or there is no research, as in very, very little to no research at the moment on all of these different syndromes, it's kind of treated like, oh, well, just bad luck.
Yeah, too bad for you.
Right.
Yeah.
You need to do the research yourself and come to your own conclusion yourself. Instead of just accepting the fact that, oh, well, we can't recommend anything to you, because it makes a lot of sense physiologically, biologically. It makes sense in the amount of women who have gone on this diet and who've had really, really difficult pregnancies before, and then suddenly it's just reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And they even having preeclampsia or preterm labor and then reversing it.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're healthy. So do your research.
And it's not too late.
No.
If you're listening to this and you're like 32, 34 weeks pregnant, there have been women who go on it and they're like, wow, I immediately felt better. I immediately had more energy. And, you know, their blood work got better. Or their anemia.
Right.
You know, that's a whole other thing. On the Brewer website, there's a whole thing on anemia and how your doctor may be telling you, oh, well, you've got anemia. We need you to supplement some iron. When in reality, her blood was getting more dilute. They will see that go down and be like,
concerned.
Really, but you need to look at the ferritin level, not the, you know, hemoglobin and all that.
Right.
But anyway, people, they'll look at that and go, it dropped below its normal range. You need to supplement. Well, your blood's just getting more dilute, which is what's supposed to be happening. It needs to stay or get lower if you're looking at it from a physiological perspective. Mm-hmm. And there's studies on that. He links, you know, on the website. All of that.
Yeah.
And all of that we've discussed. Because there's a lot there.
It's not like there is no... It's not like there is no research. There is no conclusive randomized trial study that proved it sufficient for the medical community to recommend. But that doesn't stop me from doing something that
because
makes
it's
total
food.
Sense.
It's food. But yet they're going to give you drugs and do all of this stuff. But that... You know, I remember in the hospital, they offered me, I think it was a Benadryl or an Ambien to help me sleep, you know, the night before my induction with my daughter.
Right.
I looked it up, and it's not even a safe class of drug to give to a pregnant woman.
Yeah, there's a perception, I think, of the medical, and a lot of people that I know and love are in the medical community, so I'm not hating on them, I'm just saying it's a perception that they only will tell you things if they're proven, and if it hasn't been proven, then stay away.
Yes.
But don't... A lot of times, tradition takes the place of evidence-based care, especially in obstetrics.
Ooh,
and especially in pregnancy and prenatal care, they're going to... If they don't have a conclusive... study to point to, they're going to fall back on the old standbys.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't, you know, if you're pregnant, maybe don't take that at face value. Maybe look into it deeper yourself. Look into the Brewer diet.
Yes. You got to be your own advocate because no one knows you like you do. And no one is in your body and can, you need to be your own advocate and know that sometimes all of the, you know, they're not going to be telling you everything that you might want to know about it, or if they're giving you an option for something. I mean, I remember asking one of my care providers about the Brewer diet with my first pregnancy, and they were like, well, I don't think it's going to make a difference, but you could try it.
Mm-hmm. Right, because anecdotal evidence is discounted, and you have to be careful with anecdotal evidence, but if the majority of these women are doing this, and it is providing amazing results.
Yeah. yeah.
that can't be gotten any other way through any other drug, through any other protocol, then sit up and pay attention. Yes. And then also with anything that doesn't have any conclusive evidence, risk-benefit analysis. So what are the benefits, potential benefits? Say, you know, if you're thinking about the Brewer diet, the potential benefits are enormous, possibly huge. Life-saving.
Yes.
And the potential risks, weight gain.
You might gain a little bit of extra weight.
You might
isn't that funny that we're back to that again?
Yeah, we're back to that again. Yeah. The fear of gaining weight can prevent people from pursuing something true health.
That is so good. We need to put that on a quote.
Yeah.
We need to put that on a quote thing because that is like the crux of all of this stuff. Is like, what would you be willing to do with,
would you be willing to take this drug that, you know, as a trial drug that could possibly prevent your preterm labor?
Or would you be willing to eat well and gain 5 extra pounds? Or not gain, you never know. I know people who did the full-on Brewer diet and, you know, they gained like 35 pounds, which is in the range recommended. And this time I gained like, I think I gained 39 pounds with my son. I can't remember exactly. But
I gained 43, and it was scary. It was hard on my vanity, but I was willing to do it.
And guess what, guys? How much did you say you gained? 43?
45.
Okay, 45. Yeah. So I gained like, I think it was 4. I don't even remember. Yeah. I didn't weigh 40, whatever. 40-ish. Yeah. So we gained within 5 pounds of each other.
Right.
And we had babies that were different sizes.
2 pounds
And we're different sizes. Yes. Like, we are different heights. It's just interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Your body's going to do if you sufficiently nourish it. And I guess that an argument could be made that big babies are a risk, but that's a whole other thing. To me, having a big baby is a way better thing to deal with than preeclampsia or HELLP syndrome.
And in fact, in the Brewer diet group that I'm in, which we'll link, you guys, that is a wonderful resource. If you're coming into this and you're like, want somebody to hold your hand a little bit, go to the group because they are.
Is it Facebook?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Facebook group.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But in that group, I mean, you know, big babies, like, okay. And when I say big baby, I mean, like, big is a relative term, but, you know, the average weight for a baby is like 7 pounds. I think it was like 7 pounds, 7 ounces, I read somewhere. So, you know, below that, in the 6s and 5s, you know, that's considered a little, you know, small baby or a underweight baby, depending on the gestation, of course. But then you have, you know, the 8 to 10 pounders and beyond. And Dr. Brewer actually found that when these women were eating well, they had those babies in those healthy, like that nice range between the 8 and 10. And the babies who were the big babies were actually really robust and healthy.
Yes.
Because if you think about it, and we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Would you rather, if you could pick the weight of your baby, would you rather have like a 5 pounds, 10 ounces baby.
Struggling.
And like, oh my word, they are so small and so tiny, and I might, you know, I don't know, I'm gonna accidentally break their arm
They're
or something.
Delicate.
Or would you like to have a little more sturdy, and having had a baby who is 6 pounds, 8 ounces, and having had a baby who is close to 8 pounds,
right?
I can say that the 8 pound baby, I was like, I feel a little bit more secure, and he was very healthy. So,
yes.
And again, like we're gonna say this again, what their body size does not dictate if they're healthy. So you can have someone's normal baby weight could be 6 pounds, 8 ounces. I know a lady who that's her normal baby weight, and that's her babies are very healthy. Or you can have someone who has average baby weight between 8 and 10 pounds. It's all relative, but all that being said,
don't let the fear.
A bigger baby is actually very healthy.
Yeah, don't let the fear of that prevent you from following.
Exactly. Don't be like, oh my goodness, well I'm gonna have a big baby. Well, guess what? If you look at the outcomes of the weights, and I believe there's a study, there might be on the website about birth weights, and you have issues with respiratory stuff, jaundice with the underweight babies, and then with the bigger babies. I mean, and having had the difference of 3 weeks now with my daughter, who's born at 37 weeks, and then my son born at 40 weeks and 5 days, having had that difference, I was completely different ballgame with nursing, with sleeping, with a baby who was like, he was ready to come out, and my daughter was not ready to come out.
Right.
And he was ready to, I mean, it was just different ballgame.
Yes.
And knowing that now, I'm like, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I didn't get it before.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It is very good stuff. I think that hopefully we've introduced this to people because it's a huge topic. But
and every pregnant woman should at least know about it.
Every pregnant woman should at least know about it and at least be introduced to it.
Yeah.
So I think so. But yeah, we'll include notes in show notes for you guys, like links to all of the stuff we mentioned. But yeah, you got anything else?
No.
All right. Well, I think that was it. Thanks for listening, guys, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
For more great content, check us out on Instagram. We're at instagram.com/dietdetox. We'll see you next time.